This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Our focus today, Virginia-Haiti connections. And there are a surprising number of them. All manner of Virginia-based nonprofits, church groups, and individuals have been making it their business to bring some form of assistance to the impoverished island nation. Three of those organizations represented this hour: the Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church's Haiti Outreach Program, the group Building Goodness, and the Robert Ford Foundation. They'll have much to tell us about why they do the work they do and what conditions are like in Haiti today, almost 5 years after that devastating earthquake. But you or someone you know may have some Haiti experience too. If so, we'll be hoping to add in your insight when our conversation gets underway right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Our focus this hour: connections between the Commonwealth of Virginia and the island nation of Haiti. And if you've got some perspective to share, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Already on the phone line with us, the executive editor of the Stanton News Leader newspaper, who's been a volunteer for several years now with the Haiti Outreach Program of Harrisonburg's Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, David Fritz. Thank you for making time for us.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
Plus, here in the Insight Studio at WMRA, Dr. Ray Ford, medical director for the Robert Ford Foundation's Haitian Orphanage and School, as well as Kelly Epley, executive director of the Charlottesville-based nonprofit Building Goodness. Kelly, great to see you back.
Good to be back. Thanks.
And Dr. Ford, good to be seeing you for the first time.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure.
So there's a basic question I want to ask all of you, but Dr. Ford, let me direct this query to you first. Why Haiti?
I love that question. And there's a long answer, which these guys will fill in on, but mine's quicker. I go there because that's where the Haitians are. They're the most incredible people on the planet. Of course, I haven't met all the people on the planet yet, but as far as dignity and spirit goes and making you feel good and welcome, and the strength and resilience of their nature is just inspiring, and that's why I go there. Now, Kelly has another reasons.
Oh, I would too. I'd say that too. But they do that in spite of, I would say, a history of getting the short end of the stick.
For sure.
Because they're, as we had mentioned before the show, everyone there is in the line of slaves. All their family were slaves.
Absolutely.
Since 1804. And before that, the Spanish and the French and the Dutch and many different cultures and in current history have usually put them on the receiving end of some terrible situations. But still, people are resilient, and they're kind, and they're joyous, and they know how to make a little bit go a long way. And that's very inspiring to me and to many of our volunteers that go down and are part of different construction projects. And so we've continued to be involved there because, I guess I'm agreeing with you, Ray. It might be rare, but that's where the Haitians are.
Yeah. That's a deal.
I also think when we get there, too, we see this very different culture and see people who live a very simple life, but they probably live a life that they manage to keep their focus on their families and their faith and their dignity and their pride in a way that I'm not sure I could in that circumstance. Mm-hmm. It's they live a life that's, you know, close to the bone, but it's also really close to probably what was being lived at the time the gospel is being written. And we're there. I'm there with a faith-based group, so that kind of always influences and colors what I'm thinking.
That's where the Haitians are. It's such a fascinating answer that I'm going to have to ask you each to elaborate, because it sounds like, even though you started, Ray, that our two other guests agree with you about that. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about each of your organization's efforts. For the most part, you have focused in different areas in Haiti, although I understand that Building Goodness and the Robert Ford Foundation are about to start on a joint project.
Yes.
But let's go for the basics of what each of your groups do. So, Dr. Ford, you first.
Okay, sure. There are two important efforts going on. One is called the Haiti Mission, which is a medical mission. going back to the 1980s, which has served an area called Grisongard, Haiti, which is rural and impoverished. There's a clinic there that was built by the Haiti mission, but it's owned by the Haitians now.
And describe where in Haiti this is.
Cap-Haitien is the northern, the Cape of Haiti in the north. It's the second largest city in Haiti. It's the other international port.
So it's well north of the city most people have heard of, which is Port-au-Prince.
About 100 miles straight line north. And then our clinic that we go to and the school project that we head up is about 15 miles south of the city.
And 15 miles in Haiti is a lot further than
it is indeed.
Miles
it's an hour drive on a good day.
So what do you do there?
There are two things. I lead medical teams there four times a year. Many of the people are from Central Virginia. We go to that Haitian clinic and staff it for that 1 week doing primary care, sort of as to augment what they're doing already. And we spend a week there doing primary care with our We have eight or nine docs, three or four nurses, and then lay people that just go along and help out and make things work. And we've been doing that for about 25 years. And I head up those organization of those four teams a year to go down there. The thing that's dear to my heart, though, really, is the foundation named after my father who started the funding of it. And that's a school project. It's called an orphanage school project, but it's really a school thing. It started off as a dream of the people of that impoverished community, and they came and asked, "This is what we want. We wanted to build a. They wanted to build a little orphanage and a couple hundred student school." Well, to make that 12-year story short, they not only found early funding, but they built it, they maintain it, they've made it happen, and we're not talking 200 students anymore. There are over 750 students in that school, primary and secondary, which is really important. High school education is really important. And remember, this is a free school in a poverty-stricken area. And these kids can get an education there, and that's what we do. They own it. It's owned by the people of Haiti. What we do is fund it for them as best we can.
So the decision-making about the orphanage and the school is made by the elders of the village, the people of the village themselves. What your foundation does is raise money for it.
99.5 are their decisions. The 0.5 is, I can't afford that. We can't do that. But
yet.
Yet. And which is why I'm here today, Tom.
Dave Fritz, you work in a completely different area of Haiti, actually an island off the coast of Port-au-Prince. But education is a large part of what your charity focuses on.
It is, and it's because as long as we've had the active role with the parish down there at St. Isidore in the town of Anse-Galet, that has always been the identified priority of the community, trying to do more with education. There are public schools, but they're not particularly good and they're not particularly free. We have always tried to follow the lead of the local parish there. They've had a school. They've had a school for 50 years now, and it's 1,000 students. And it does very, very well, but it serves a lot of students who can't afford to pay tuition. And so that's one of the things we do is we try to figure out ways to pay tuition for students. We also know that students who are hungry don't learn very well. They say there that you can't listen to the teacher and your stomach at the same time. So we try to find ways to deal with their food program needs, and that's always a huge issue.
So the name of the island, the name of the town, the name of the school?
The name of the island is Laganav. It's about 35 miles long, about 15 miles wide. It sits in the Gulf that is formed by the main portion of Haiti. It sits off Port-au-Prince by about 20-some miles. And this parish actually is about one-eighth of the island. The north-east one-eighth of the island. So it includes the main city of Anse-Galet, where St. Isidore Church and St. Bernadette School are located. And then it also, the parish that it draws from is also goes up into the mountains and around that portion of the island. But it's a mountainous place. Our 15 miles, if we were to go 15 miles in a vehicle, while it might take an hour south of Port-au-Prince, that's actually about a three-hour truck ride on the island of Waganoff.
Kelly Upley, Building Goodness' sort of unique focus on charitable efforts began in a specific area of Haiti. And although you continue to work there and you have some new projects coming up in different areas of Haiti, Building Goodness is now doing work in a number of other places around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're focusing primarily on Haiti, tell us, if I recall, Kelly, where you've done the most work, where Building Goodness Foundation has done the most work, is kind of between where Ray was describing in Haiti and where David was describing.
Well, it's on the other side of the island, whereas Ray's Cap Haitien is in the north. We've been operating in the south, and then Waganoff is the island that's sort of in the middle. And so, you know, you can draw a triangle between them, and we're the southern point.
So you're working south of Port-au-Prince?
Yes, we are. It's west.
Again,
it's,
in a very rural area.
It's west of Port-au-Prince.
Okay. When
you get to, you come south in the island, you get to Port-au-Prince, and you move out in the west.
Okay.
And so but
so
it's,
what are you doing, and where is this? What's the name of this place?
We started around a community. The largest community that is known in that area is Laogon. We've worked in the mountains south of Laogon for 15 years doing housing and working with a number of other nonprofits and ministries. The way Building Goodness is set up literally is our large resource, I would say, is the generosity of the local construction industry in Central Virginia. We're based primarily in Charlottesville, but these are people who are builders and designers and project managers who give hours and hours, days and weeks, and literally weeks to travel and to be a part of a project. We find a partner, an NGO or a ministry like either of these groups, and they have construction needs generally. The local construction methods aren't sufficient. They want a better building. They want a transparent bookkeeping system. And so we provide them the pipeline of the skilled people from Virginia. And now we have people joining us from all over the country. They find us online and they join us. And so we started in the Laogon area. And since then, as you said, we've spread out into many countries in Central America, almost all of them.
What kinds of things have you been building in Laogon?
We've in Laogon specifically, housing. And we've in other parts of Haiti, schools and medical clinics. Those are the primary areas. We've focused over the years to be in line with the United Nations Millennium Development Goals, to work specifically in primary education, women's health, ecology, and economic development. And so the groups that we work with specifically make a huge difference, and their impact is in those areas. Ray Ford School is making a huge difference in that area. We vet our partners very well. We've heard of him for a long time, heard the service that they've offered for a long time, and we wanted to be involved with it. So when he came to us and said we need a secondary school, it was an easy thing to join up with him and say, we can help you with this building.
It was actually easier than that, Kelly. You came to me and said, do you need...
Can we
help?
I
want to ask you more about that, but there are probably people who just tuned in. So let me mention that our guests, Kelly Epley from the Building Goodness Foundation, Ray Ford from the Robert Ford Foundation, plus by phone, Dave Fritz from the Haiti Outreach Program of Harrisonburg's Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you want to talk to any or all of our guests, you can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And let me read this post from Lawrence, who says, I'm very much in favor of helping people in need, but do you ever worry that some aid efforts could be causing more harm than good? There certainly have been stories about this kind of thing in Haiti, foreign visitors bringing disease, aid programs that end up crippling homegrown industry and agriculture. Good intentions do not always bring good results. Gentlemen, you can probably hear the music, which means that you're going to get a few moments to think about your response to Lawrence's points. And our audience is going to stay tuned, I'm sure, through a very quick break, and then we'll be back. Retired Charlottesville pediatrician Ray Ford is one of our guests. Most of his medical work these days is with the Robert Ford Foundation Orphanage and School in Haiti. Building Goodness Foundation Executive Director Kelly Epley is also in studio with us, and with us by phone, newspaper editor Dave Fritz, a Haiti Outreach Program volunteer at the Blessed Sacrament Church of Harrisonburg. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Lawrence's question I read before the break. Who wants to respond? Kelly?
Great question.
It's a great question. We love that question because it gives us a chance to respond. And I wouldn't speak for my colleagues here, but I think they will understand when I say that by donations coming to one of our groups, you can be assured that the money does go to the ground where it's working and to the people with whom we're working. It does not go through some of the larger funds that we'll collect and then have a huge overhead. Our group specifically set up connections with local communities. Our solutions are community-based, and we buy locally, we buy materials locally, we buy food locally, we employ people locally, so that funds that come to us do go directly to the place that where they're needed. But by having relationships with the people on the ground and the vendors and the people we employ, we can be assured that there is no graft, and then in fact that we can follow up and do transparent bookkeeping. And that's something that our donors are all wanting to be assured about. 90% of all of our funding that comes to BGF goes directly to programs and getting the buildings built with our partners. We do have an office here in the States that we have to run. But I think that Ray can speak a little bit better to that, and maybe Dave can as well.
You know, my take on this is largely medical, because that's what I've done all my adult life, is be a doctor. I have found also this perspective is helpful. As I look in the community of Grisengard, Haiti, there's a full generation of children who would go without education if someone didn't educate them. And your point of there is this. We can either let that generation not be educated and go scream at the government and try to get it done, or try to educate them and at the same time work with the possibility of expanding care by the government and so on. It's a very, very delicate and a very good question. It's hardly different from myself as a doctor coming to a patient, a child who's sick with pneumonia, and knowing the problems with antibiotic resistance in the world and so on, telling the parent that we're not going to treat that child because of the problems with antibiotic overuse and so on in the world. That's ridiculous on the face of it. That child is our patient. These children are the children that need to be educated now. So it's a very difficult issue and a very good question.
We've always looked at education as, you know, it can be frustrating in the short haul because we educate students. We have about 20 to 25 students every year who graduate from the school with PhilO, which is their college preparatory year. It's a 13th grade. They actually go more years than we do. And to get there, they've gone through a lot. They've gone through a lot of national tests that if they don't pass them, they can't go to school anymore. They've overcome tremendous difficulties in terms of getting to school in adverse conditions. But they not only make it, they come and they are prepared and they are presentable and they are going to be proud to be there, and they do a fantastic job with it. And yet when those kids get out of PhilO, they may not even have a place that is going to be able to accept them for college, because there's very few opportunities, especially if you're a kid from the poor island of Laganav. But yet we know that at some point the education is going to be necessary, even if it isn't necessarily today. I often liken it to putting up firewood when you can, because you know a day is going to come when you're going to need some firewood. In Haiti, we know that the day will eventually come where education will become more important, than that people will be able to have more of a hand in their economy and in their government. And we need to lay down that base level of people first, so that when that day comes, these people can be fully participatory in their tremendous history of being the second republic in this hemisphere after us.
Our guests, Kelly Epley from the Building Goodness Foundation, Dr. Ray Ford from the Robert Ford Foundation, plus by phone Dave Fritz from the Haiti Outreach Program of Harrisonburg's Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Phone number easy to remember is 888-WMRA-TALK. We're going next to Charlottesville. Mary Alex, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Epley, I've been following your organization for quite some time and the good work that you do, especially in Haiti. Can you speak to how you choose your strategic partnerships and how do you measure those results with your partners?
Thanks for that question, Mary Alex. We do choose our partners well based on outcomes, based on several things, that they're sustainable, that they have an education program that's sustainable, that they have a donor base that's sustainable, that they have community input, and that they have representation from organizations on the ground, the committees that are local, and that they are going to take care of the building that we help build with them very well. So after a pretty thorough vetting process, then we joined with them to help them in supporting and raising the funds. So we base our decision on the impacts they make. We like to see real results. Our organization is based in the building and the construction industry, and these guys don't fool around. They like to see something done well when they give their dollars and their time.
So part two of Mary Alex's question, I think, was how do you gauge whether or not you're successful, whether the partnership was successful?
We follow up. As a foundation, it's our right and our duty to follow up to make sure that resources that we've put into an organization are well used. So we follow up every several years, try to on an annual basis with questions.
Have there ever been any sort of hard-won lessons where things didn't go too well and you've learned to say, well, we now understand that we shouldn't do that?
Yes, there are. And we have learned some lessons. I wouldn't say they're devastating lessons, but we've built buildings before that weren't used as quickly as we would like to see them used. The programs that they were designed for, after the earthquake, we built a number of buildings that still aren't quite being used in the way that we had originally planned. But they are online to do that. Things happen slowly in Haiti, so we're trying to be fair about that. But that doesn't happen. That hasn't happened in many of our buildings. In fact, we've built 400 homes in a population where there's so many people that are still homeless and live in basically tents that have a frame in them. Those homes are well used, and the schools we built are well used. The economic development agricultural center we built with the comprehensive development program are well used. The forestation that group does is done well. So we measure in results and trees planted and kids educated and people treated in the clinics that we build.
Mary Alex, such a great question. Thank you so much for calling in. 888-WMRA-TALK by phone, and all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Another call coming in from Charlottesville. This is Peter. Thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hello. Good topic for me today. I've just returned from the Dominican Republic. I was there for 2 months. I met a poor Haitian family. I was trying to help them without just handing them money. I mean, I would do that, but I didn't want to only do that. And one thing that I found out was that they would cook. They had a little simple stove, homemade stove, a charcoal stove. It cost them 50 pesos, a little over a dollar, to buy the charcoal that would last only a day, so they could cook. So I built them a stove. I gave it to them just as I was leaving. It's based on a design you can find on the internet called a wood gasifier. It's made out of tin cans. It's very clean burning, and I haven't proven it, but I think it could be used without charcoal. In other words, just plain wood. I will go back. I'm going to try to perfect the design of the stove. I was making it a little bigger than typically what you see for hiking. I'm going to try to come up with a design that is easy to build with hand tools and work works well. If I can do that and teach people how to make these for very little cost, would that be of interest to some institution?
There are organizations that are working on different alternative cooking projects in different spots. I know that not so much on Laganav, it hasn't reached, but I know that in the mountains over Port-au-Prince in a place called Mont L'Hôpital, there's an effort by the good people at Blue Ridge Community College and Rebecca Evans there to work with a church in that area to not only work on some interesting little stoves, but also some alternative fuels that can be used in them. Everything from waste scrap wood, cardboard, packing materials, you know, a little bit of animal dung if they've got it, all sorts of things that can be compressed and dried and made into it. And there are some cultural barriers, obviously, in changing the nature of how people cook their food. But you know, there's several organizations doing that. And the best thing that I think that all of them are doing is they're figuring out how to do a prototype, and then they're figuring out ways to teach people on the ground to actually to make these, and if they can, make them into a business to sell them if they're actually that successful, because then you're actually turning a person into a recipient, or from a recipient into a maybe a little bit of an entrepreneur.
Peter, being in Charlottesville, I would think a logical next step might be to talk to some people over at the University of Virginia, especially their School of Engineering, which I understand that different departments in that school have been involved in just the kinds of things that you're talking about in terms of trying to meet needs for simple devices that can be used in developing portions of the world to great effect. But thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. That was a fascinating to hear. Retired Charlottesville pediatrician Ray Ford is one of our guests. Most of the medical work these days he's doing is with the Robert Ford Foundation Orphanage and School in Haiti. Building Goodness Foundation Executive Director Kelly Epley is also in studio with us. And with us by phone, newspaper editor Dave Fritz, a Haiti Outreach Program volunteer at the Blessed Sacrament Church of Harrisonburg. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. 888-WMRA-TALK, the easy way to remember our phone number as we are examining Virginia-Haiti connections on this edition. And we have another call from Charlottesville. Everybody from Charlottesville today. We got other listening areas. If you're someplace outside Charlottesville, you're allowed to call too. 888-967-2825. But I'm pretty sure I know this caller. It looks like it might be Dr. Greg Gelbird, who, if I recall correctly, is associated with another Haiti charitable effort. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for picking up the call. First, I wanted to reemphasize what Ray Ford talked about earlier, that we have found that the best kind of ministry is where we come alongside. And, you know, the 99.5% that Ray mentioned that's done locally, decided locally, is really the best model. And the old-style missionary idea that too many of us still hold in our head is hopefully gone forever. And those of us who have read this book called When Helping Hurts just indicates the same, that we really need to support their ideas, maybe give them a little information, and probably a fair amount of cash. You've got some great guests on there. I don't want to talk too long, but I do want to say that there are many opportunities for listeners to get involved, not just donations, which are always, always welcomed by any organization that goes to Haiti, but also to go down there and spend a week or spend a few days, because these people, like so many other parts of the world, they get into your hearts and they don't leave. They're wonderful people. You come home and you feel like, wow, there's hope for the world. Because for a person who has almost nothing, to be happy and joyful and laughing and giving back to us, the people that come down to see them, is incredible. And it's a wonderful experience that many of us don't get to take, but we should. So that's my shtick here today.
Well, before you go away, Greg, remind us of the name of the organization you work with. Is it something like Wazanu?
Yeah. It's Wazanu, which is Creole for our neighbor, and it's spelled V as in Victor, W-A-Z-E-N, and then N-O-U. That's N-O-U, and it's .org, and that's It's another organization that goes down and does medical relief clinics 3-4 times a year and feeding programs to a couple of the schools. And it's still expanding. We've been there for 8 years. And, again, it always helps to go with people that have a long-standing relationship with the local people in Haiti, because then I think we are much more effective.
Do you have a web page? You do, because you said .org, so you must have a web page.
.org, yeah, we do. Yeah.
So this is an opportunity for me to let anybody listening know that the gentleman representing organizations on our guest panel today, there's more information about each of those organizations on the Virginia Insight webpage at WMRA.org. But, Greg, since we're Facebook friends, I'm pretty sure you can access Facebook. Even though it's been a long time since we've talked to each other. If you get a chance to go to the Virginia Insight Facebook page and post a little bit of information about your organization, so people want to know how to access it there, they can as well. Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks again for having these great folks.
We've got Kelly Epley from the Building Goodness Foundation, Ray Ford from the Robert Ford Foundation, plus by phone David Fritz from the Haiti Outreach Program of Harrisonburg's Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. Phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. We're going again to Charlottesville. I think this is Marnie. Marnie, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for taking my call, but I'm in Stanton. Is that okay?
That's absolutely wonderful. I have absolutely nothing against Charlottesville, but it's nice to know that there are other people listening too.
I'm just calling about the previous caller who mentioned that he was teaching people that he was making ovens or interested in making ovens. There is an organization in Charlottesville called CASEP, which stands for Central America Solar Energy Project, and they teach people in these communities they teach women particularly how to make a solar oven, and that doesn't even need wood. So I just thought he might be interested in checking in with those people and seeing if there's something he has to offer them, something they might have to offer him.
And that's CASEP.
That's right.
And that was Peter, who called a little while ago from Charlottesville, saying that he thought he had invented a new type of stove that would not need coal, would need wood. But, you know, solar is also interesting. So thanks for sharing that.
Yes, this CASEP project has worked primarily in Guatemala, but I think in other Central American countries. Their primary photographer is Tom Cogill, who's my son-in-law, and I'm very proud of the work he's done there.
I'll bet you are. Marnie, thanks so much for calling in. Ray Ford, I have the sense that for a while you've been wanting to add some stuff to the conversation.
Well, that was a long time ago. I was going to respond to Peter's comment about one of the things that's happened with the project in Grease and Guard, Haiti, is that...
We're not doing this on purpose. We're not cutting you off playing the music. So I promise you that when we get back from the break, we're going to give you a chance to talk at further length, as well as anybody who wants to either call in and add in their perspective about Virginia-Haiti connections.
Ray, you took too long.
Anything that you're hearing from our guests, he did not. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK on Facebook. We're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Imagine that. We'll be back in a bit more than 1 minute. David Fritz is executive editor of the Stanton News Leader newspaper. For some years now, he's been a volunteer with the Haiti Outreach Program based at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church in Harrisonburg. Dr. Ray Ford is medical director for the organization named after his father, the Robert Ford Haitian Orphanage and School Foundation. The Charlottesville-based nonprofit Building Goodness got its start with volunteer construction efforts in Haiti. And while it is still very much involved there, it now also does similar work in several places across the globe. Building Goodness Executive Director Kelly Epley is with us. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Dr. Ford.
One of the aspects of the project that we have going on, the Robert Ford Foundation, is that I've mentioned earlier that it's owned entirely by the people of Grease and Guard in that community. Well, they kinds, all kinds of different ways to spend money and to do things. And these are just some of the things. Besides the primary school and secondary school, they've created, with our funding entirely by us, a vocational school. And I was thinking, as Peter talked about the stoves, that school could easily construct stoves and sell them for a minimal profit, just as they do uniforms, caskets, and all sorts of things there. That can be a moneymaker for a vocational school. Another thing that project managers do, who are all Haitians, is they're taking care of the homeless elderly in a community. They've created a compound. Kelly, you saw that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of duplexes, very nice cement or concrete block duplexes that house homeless elderly, call them orphans, if you will. And some of them just live out the rest of their lives, which have been uncomfortable lives and maybe in a bed for the first time, two solid meals a day, and it's greatly appreciated. They want to build 10 more houses. They've already got 10. So there's no end to where our donations can go.
Hey, David Fritz.
Yes.
I'd love if you could give me a personal answer to my question, but if you want to put it off to people in general, that's fine. You're a journalist. Sometimes you're not supposed to reveal your personal stuff. But if I've got the story correct, it was a little more than 4 years ago, sometime early 2010, when you first got involved with your church's efforts in Haiti.
Yes.
When you first went down there.
Yeah.
So what I'm wondering about is what motivates you and what you think motivates other people.
First time out, it was a combination of curiosity. I'd been hearing about this ministry for a long time. An opportunity. It was a time when my daughter was off to college, and I wasn't worrying about her swim team or any of those things, and trying to figure out how I was going to spend some time. And someone from our group made a pitch at a mass, and I said, yeah, this sounds interesting. I have no idea if I could be useful. I have no idea what I can do, but it's interesting. Something about it is appealing to me, or interesting to me, or is intriguing me. And so I raised my hand and said I wanted to go. And then that was actually late 2009. We were supposed to go in February 2010. The earthquake happened. It postponed it, but it certainly magnified everyone's interest in Haiti suddenly, and I was able to learn a whole lot more about it before I actually got there. And then the first trip, which was still just, it was that unknown that was bringing me there. But three, you know, I think about things that happened, and one has to do with learning or meeting some people, meeting students in the school, seeing how hard these kids were working. On your Facebook page, there's a picture of myself with a young woman who's actually by the name of Angelica. She's a student who I sponsor in the school there.
There's a story, I understand, Dave Fritz, about meeting that little girl and one point where she took your hand.
Yeah, she... We get an assembly line going, because what we have is we have a sponsorship program where individuals in our parish will pay tuition for students at the school. Probably 20% of the students at the school cannot pay tuition, and we try to get as many as we reasonably can sponsored through our parish. We set them up as an assembly line. We take pictures for the people, for the sponsors every year. We collect family information. We get just all the basics, and then we are always adding new people to the program, either because students leave school, move away, or graduate out. Or
so, Dave,
because we have more sponsors.
As I understand the story, you're down there for the first time. You're a photographer.
I'm taking all the pictures.
Right.
And this one little girl comes up in front of me, and she's looking kind of disheveled.
And she's about
to get her looking good. She's 8 years old at that point.
Okay.
And so I take her picture, and she just sort of, I need to process her off to the next person who's going to gather all of her personal information. And she doesn't get it. And my Creole is zero at this point. And so I try to point. No, I take her by the hand. I lead her down to Claudia Pascarella, who's the leader of our group, and to get the information. And she starts to interview her, but she's not letting go of my hand. And she's not letting go of my hand, no matter what I try. And so finally, Claudia finishes with her and says, you know, she's not sponsored. And I said, yeah, she is now. So she picked me. And I have built this relationship, you know, with many people down there, but that's one person I always know I'm going to see every time I'm down there. And it's a way of identifying and connecting with another person who's living in a very different place in a very different set of circumstances. And that's not something we're really trying to build within our parishioners who go down. And I'm trying to find, as the leader of this group this year, that will be going in November, ways to make people, help people make those connections so that there is someone here. So we understand them, we understand their lives, and we can relate to them, and also so they can to us. So it isn't just those are the people who come and we ask them for money for things and they do or they don't give it, because that's a very superficial relationship and it's not really what it's about.
Kelly Epley, as I understand Dave Fritz's story, he's not sure exactly why he decided to go the first time, other than, you know, it seems sort of worth trying. But once he was there, he made the kind of connection that made it inevitable he was going to keep going back. From the way you were nodding as he was telling the story, I'm guessing that that's not something you're hearing the first time.
No, I think that's very common and I would never to diminish that experience, because it's wonderfully uncommon, but it's very common. It's unusual that people have this need to connect with someone else who is in that situation, but then to have the character to follow through on that and make that commitment and follow through with that is just astounding to me. But I see it happen a lot. I see a lot of our volunteers make serious connections with people in the communities that they're with, and even beyond the language barrier, they will see a person in need, but a person with dignity, and try to respect them and get to know them and their time that they're there. So it drives many people to continue to go back to Haiti. And then organizations like these find ways to use them with integrity and to put them in a place where their skills can be used well and that people benefit from their gifts as well.
That's certainly true on our medical missions. About 80 to 90% of our volunteers, which about 100 a year ago, are returnees, some for 20 years or more. That it's, you come back, it's hard to describe. It's a visceral thing almost. You just feel great, and you can't even describe why necessarily. And they come back over and over again.
And each time you go, or each time you come back, you've spent time in between learning more about it, learning history, reading, better understanding the culture, figuring out more ways that possibly we can have a positive impact. It becomes a cycle. Mm-hmm. I've been 5 times. So I'll be going for my 6th time in November.
Every couple of years here on Virginia Insight, we've ended up doing a show that somehow relates to Haiti, because there seem to be so many Virginia connections to Haiti. And it may be 7 or 8 years ago, the first time that we did a show, that Greg Gelbert, who called in a little earlier in the hour, physician from Charlottesville, was one of our guests. And I still to this day recall the story that he was trying to tell until he broke down in tears. And in essence, as I recall the story, there was a man who had some sort of illness or disease that was eminently treatable as long as he kept taking the right pills for it. But the pills were expensive. And Greg's organization gave him money so that he could continue paying for these pills. And when they came back several months later, they found that the man had stopped taking the pills and didn't have the money. And he said that he had given, I don't remember the exact amount, but it amounted to something like 90% of the money that he was given to his neighbors. And when Greg asked him why, this man said they needed the help. And yet, the story, once again, was of someone who had this terrible illness, but was very happy, very giving, was very willing to share whatever it was he had with others. And I hear that kind of story all the time from people who come back from Haiti. So my question is, why? Why is it that in such an impoverished nation facing so many challenges, the people facing so many challenges, you find something so different than we do here in our own world in America?
That's a great question, and I think it goes back to the history of the place. remember that since everyone's descended from a slave who was there in 1804, they've always lived this way. This is not an issue of civil war breaking them up, famine, issues of that. They have always lived in utmost poverty. Almost all the money that comes into that country goes to the government and doesn't get out to the people. That's how they've always lived. That seems to be anarchy at first. There are big-time rules about how you live in a society which seems to be not have guardians standing over it. And I think that is the key element there. It's the way life has always been.
Mm-hmm. No one ever fully expects to escape misery in Haiti. All they can do is try to lessen it for themselves and the people around them based on what they have at that particular moment.
David, I haven't been to Haiti yet, so maybe I'm misunderstanding what I'm hearing, but when you say escape misery, it seems to me that the stories I've heard from you gentlemen today and from previous shows we've done about anything related to Haiti, these people don't feel like they're living in misery, or they don't certainly act.
But it is a word that is used in a certain sense there, I suppose, and I've probably picked up on the vernacular. They know they live in miserable conditions. They know that we have much more than they have. They know that the rest of the world has left them in the dust, and their own government has left them in the dust, and in many ways the NGOs that came in after the earthquake have left them in the dust. And yet they move on, and they don't dwell on that. And then maybe that's the difference. It's misery, but it's not a overwhelming stops their lives. They go on. They somehow continue and share and get through and eke by. Whether they're the person who actually can make a few dollars, or the person who's dealing with a terrible illness in the family, they still find a way to make a go of it, and neighbors help neighbors, family helps family, and that's how they get through.
There is a social structure in Haiti that is responsible for this. Many people, it's been documented and studied by sociologists. This is called the Lacou structure. After colonial periods left off, and after many of the slaves that were driven into the mountains when they escaped slavery, they would form small communities in the mountains that weren't based on blood. They were based on families being together and watching each other's backs. And a Lacou structure is anything between 8 and 12 or 15 families, can be 100 people. But to your Lacou, you are always true. And you always take care of the people who are your neighbors. And if you are in the Lacou with someone, if you've grown up with them, those are the people to whom you feel ethically committed. So when these large government movements come through or big changes happen in the country, what is the stabilizing factor in Haiti, and I'm not a sociologist, but I think this is pretty well documented, is that there are these core communities. Literally, they take care of each other, and they're going to starve or thrive together. If someone in your family and in your Lacou needs something, they have the right to ask you for it. And so they take care of each other that way. And this is probably why medication money that was meant for his own need went to someone else, because someone else had a greater need in his community.
Dr. Ray Ford, before we run out of time and we're getting close, I need to ask you, in all these years that you've been working in Haiti now, can you tell me how you are different in your life, in your world, than you would be if you'd never had this experience? Can you imagine how you would be different?
Why don't you ask a hard question? let's see. If I go to a football game and I come away happy, that's one sort of happiness. Going to Haiti and hanging around down there, doing the medical thing, and coming back happy is a whole different kind of satisfaction that's almost indescribable. I think we've glossed over a little bit, too, to just move away a second from the agony that suffered in malnutrition in Haiti. The abysmally awful maternal death rate, newborn death rate that we suffer with. I see an orphan, a newly orphaned baby almost daily when we're down there on medical mission. And there are deep, deep problems that we aren't even beginning to reach, and someone needs to reach somehow. And that's why, in answer to the initial question that's asked, are we doing any good? We really need to be doing two things. Do our thing that we're doing now. Offer the medical care. But somehow make the world understand that they need help.
Tom, and I'm so sorry, Dave, we are out of time because I wanted to ask the same question of you and of Kelly, but we'll have to have you back and get your response then. Our guests have been Ray Ford, Medical Director of the Robert Ford Haitian Orphanage and School Foundation, Kelly Epley, Executive Director of the Building Goodness Foundation, and by phone, David Fritz, Executive Editor of the Stanton News Leader newspaper, as well as volunteer with the Haiti Outreach Program of the Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church of Harrisonburg. Gentlemen, thank you so much all for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Podcast of this program available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about our guests and the organizations they are here representing. Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay, Dan Easley, our technical director, associate producers Terry Ward and Bob Levicky, some of our break music supplied by Robert Juspe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight. First of all, he's not the guy with the similar name now running for re-election. Although, if you've ever thought about holding public office, he could probably help. But he'll also tell you that you can be a leader no matter what your station in life. James Madison University's longtime leadership guru, Mark J. Warner, is our guest on the next Virginia Insight.
JMU's Mark Warner on our next installment of Virginia Insight. That's Monday afternoon at 3.
Celebrate the 40th anniversary of A Prairie Home Companion with WMRA. We're gathering on September 20th for a listening party to hear Garrison Keeler and the rest of the Prairie Home Companion gang kick off the season. Join us for games, giveaways, and of course all the news from Lake Wobegon. We'll even get a chance to watch the Prairie Home Companion broadcast from St. Paul, Minnesota.
And if you've got that Saturday night free, hope you can join us. That's Saturday, September 20th, in a live video cast of A Prairie Home Companion. It's happening at Blue Sprocket Sound in Harrisonburg. You can reserve your seats now at WMRA.org. We also have more details there. This is WMRA Harrisonburg 90.7, WMRY Crozet Charlottesville 103.5, WMRL Lexington 89.9, WMLU Farmville 91.3, and Winchester 94.5. It's 4 o'clock and All Things Considered is next.
Our transatlantic community represents an island of security, stability, and prosperity.
Front and center at the NATO summit, Russia's aggression in Ukraine.
It's Thursday, September 4th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Audie Cornish. NATO is poised to announce a rapid response force for Eastern Europe.
As I